Support for WYPR comes from the Park School of Baltimore's Saturday morning Rise and Shine activity sessions for children 3 to 5 years of age. Nature expedition through the Park School woods is April 20th. parkschool.net/shine.
I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. The 2021 session of the Maryland General Assembly gets underway tomorrow. Today, a preview of the session with Speaker of the House, Adrian Jones. What are the Speaker's top legislative priorities? In a session like no other, how will delegates stay safe while attending to the people's business? And will lawmakers be able to fashion pandemic relief through an equity lens? Plus, the dangers of demagoguery. To understand Donald Trump's rise to power, we can look to the tactics once employed by a senator who gave demagoguery a new name, McCarthyism. The author and historian Larry Tye joins me to talk about his book, Demagogue, The Life and Long Shadow of Senator Joe McCarthy. Midday starts after these headlines. Good afternoon and welcome to Midday. Thanks for being with us. I'm Tom Hall. The 2021 session of the Maryland General Assembly begins tomorrow. Today, a preview of the session with the Speaker of the House, Adrian Jones, who represents Baltimore County. We recorded our conversation yesterday morning, about a half hour before Governor Larry Hogan held a press conference in which he announced that he'll be introducing the Relief Act of 2021, a billion-dollar stimulus and tax relief package for individuals and small businesses. The governor said he will be introducing this bill as emergency legislation tomorrow. Later this week, I'll speak with Senate President Bill Ferguson, and I'll be able to get his reaction to Governor Hogan's proposal at that time. But again, the governor made his announcement after my conversation with Speaker Jones. Madam Speaker, Happy New Year. Welcome back.
Happy New Year to you, and thank you for having me. I'm glad to be back.
Glad to have you. Let's talk first about logistics. The mechanics of how the House is going to operate differ slightly from how the Senate is going to operate. You've got to obviously keep legislators safe given the pandemic. So give us a sense of how it's going to work physically in terms of meeting, voting, introducing legislation, etc.
As you well know, we have three times the number of members as the Senate. So we will be in two different locations, the main chamber and the what we call the chamber annex, which is in the House building. And those members who are immune compromised will be in a separate area. Of course, everything with the proper protocols. For the first day, because our Constitution requires, we had to do some rule changes to allow us to virtually meet for our bill hearing. So after the first day, probably until February, we won't be in the chamber. We will be having, the committees will be doing their work virtually. The first day, which is Wednesday, that will be live stream, in which, again, I mentioned about the rule change, and we also had to vote in the speaker and the speaker pro tem. But the public can have access. They can sign up to give their input on bills. And if they want to meet with the bill sponsor, the member, they can do it either virtually or they can schedule a meeting with that member. Again, all the protocols in effect, there was the, you know, testing, et cetera. So that is how we're looking to run. Still trying to make sure that we have the public have access to us and the bills that are being heard that are important to them.
And as I understand it, the Constitution, to a great extent, of the state of Maryland dictates that, for example, members must be in Annapolis. In other words, it wouldn't be constitutionally possible for members to, you know, meet via Zoom from their homes around the state.
Yes, you're absolutely correct. Yes. And we, those who will be housed in the annex, I still will see them on the screen, and they still can participate. They still can, you know, when we do bill, debate the bills, they can do that. We have all these protections that they can do when that part happens. So.
And HB 1, the first bill that you're going to introduce in the House, as well as the first bill in the Senate, is the bill that will provide $577 million to HBCUs over the next 10 years. Governor Hogan vetoed that bill last year, but you appear to be reintroducing it as a new bill. What's going on with that?
Yeah, it's the same bill, but with revised date. What the general public failed to realize, the state lost the program duplication claim. So the bill outlines a way to settle this case, which has been going on for over 15 years. So we can move forward and plan for the future. Again, it's spread out purposely, so it's not just one impact in one single year.
Do you expect the governor will once again veto the new bill?
I cannot predict that, but hopefully he will look at the bill and see that far as the merits and the fact that it is spread out. And I did try to meet with him. I did bring it up several times when we had meetings with him, and he did not want to respond. That's the reason why the bill is being introduced with the revisions that are in it.
It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. My guest is the Speaker of the Maryland House of Delegates, Adrian Jones. The 2021 session of the Maryland General Assembly begins tomorrow. So, Madam Speaker, speaking of vetoes, the governor did veto some 36 bills, I think, at last count last session. I assume that several of those are going to be taken up for overrides. Give us a lay of the land there. Do you expect most or all of those bills, the vetoes of the bills by the governor, to be overridden? Where does that stand?
Well, because overrides involve both parties, that's a discussion both the president and I have, so we're, you know, on the same page or not. But I know that we're in agreement in terms of overriding Kerwin, that I can say. But for the other one, the others, potential ones, that would be a discussion he and I would have.
And that you're referring to the bill that was animated by the Kerwin Commission, the big education spending bill. The right. Governor says the state simply doesn't have the money, but do you expect that the legislature has the votes to override his veto?
Yes. And Kerwin is, in particular, in light of this pandemic, is needed more than ever. And also, you know, as far as your listeners, and I remember, this is not just for this year, it's spread out, but we need to get that bill passed in order to be able to enact some of the provisions in it. So it's not a one time we're going to take a whole big bunch of money out of the budget. It is down the road over a series of years. So
there is some indication that the revenue projections, which at one point were pretty dire at the beginning of the pandemic last spring, those have actually improved a little bit. What's your take on, you know, the fiscal condition of the state as we go into this this year's session?
The revenues are slightly stronger than we thought back in September when the last estimates we had. But we still have a $750 million structural deficit to resolve for next fiscal year. And though the federal stimulus doesn't really help the bottom line for us, but it does take pressure off the general fund to pay for things to get us through the pandemic, you know, such as the testing, schools, vaccine distribution, rental assistance, those type of things will help us that we need that be able to assist our citizens that we serve.
You mentioned that the Kerwin Education funding, particularly important given the fact that so many children have had to, you know, school at home, and so many children in our state have found it very difficult to do that because of access to Wi-Fi, access to computer equipment, and the bulk of the problems are with those low-income families around the state. So there's an equity element, to be sure, in education as well as in many other areas. Talk about how the racial equity focus will be directed in this session of the General Assembly.
You're talking about the agenda that I had referenced?
Yeah. I mean, the other priorities you have besides Kerwin, for example.
Essentially, since the summer, I had met with both state, national leaders on ways to what I reference as a originally it was called like a black agenda, but a racial equity, referencing we having both racial and economic justice agenda. It focuses on several categories: housing, health, corporate management, banking, and government. It's a way of, I'll give you an example of why it's needed. If a husband and wife were about to visit a home, and this is an actual buy, you know, one have their sell their home, and what would happen, say the husband is white and the wife is black. So if the wife goes and talks with the realtor, the appraisal we have shown has been much lower. The husband, who is white, goes in with the realtor, the appraisal is much higher, and we saw evidence of that, just one area. So we're just trying to do an agenda that makes it more equitable for everyone, but you'll hear more and more about that as it goes along. And I reference it because oftentimes I'm asked, I guess more recently, as a case of Hopkins, when they found that Hopkins had slaves. And I was telling a colleague in your field that can't change that, but we can go forward in terms of how we can make better for black and brown individuals now. And I think this agenda will do that. So stay tuned when you see the full rollout.
Of course, you're referring to the recent scholarship that discovered that Johns Hopkins, the namesake of Johns Hopkins University, who had been known in lore heretofore as a staunch abolitionist, in fact, had slaves in his household. And that research by Hopkins historians and others continues. How about policing? There are many people who support repealing the LEOBR, the Law Enforcement Officers Bill of Rights. This has come up perennially over the last several years. Where do you think that stands for this session?
That was one of the recommendations from the Police Accountability and Reform Work Group for the repeal. And that was, you know, voted out by the committee. I think it was a unanimous vote for that particular item. But also, the other recommendations was establishing statewide standards for accountability, banning no-knock warrants and chokeholds, and mandating a use of force policy for every police officer in Maryland. And it also establishes a decertification process. We not only will pass legislation, but also legislation to reform the disclosure of police personnel records in Maryland during the 21 legislative session. And Chairman Clippinger has that legislation.
So as you mentioned, there was a House work group that met and recommended to scrap the law, the LEOBR, but the Senate does not have anything analogous to that. I mean, there was a committee that heard some testimony, but it didn't take a position one way or the other. What does that say to you about the chance for an LEOBR either repeal or revision passing both chambers?
Well, the format of the Senate work group was different than ours. They specifically were dealing with some key bills that, you know, I think previously may have come forward. Ours, we had the public come out and testify in terms of what we had the law enforcement individuals So what we have come up with is the culmination of that feedback that we have gotten from the members and plus industry standards, et cetera. So only thing I can say that, you know, we'll have our bill and, you know, and whatever bills that they have may not be on the same. So I don't think it'll be a conflict, because if they, you know, I don't know if they're going to be cross files in the Senate, because I have not seen all the what all the pre-files are as yet. But I do know that this is something that the work group, that the citizens that came out and testified, the mothers who have lost sons, et cetera, this is important. And, you know, we're going to have a bill hearing, and hopefully that these bills will pass.
If you just joined us, it's midday. I'm Tom Hall. My guest is the Speaker of the Maryland House of Delegates, Adrian Jones. The 2021 session of the General Assembly begins in Annapolis tomorrow. Madam Speaker, when it comes to COVID relief, there was, of course, a nine-month discussion period, or at least a six-month discussion period at the federal level about a stimulus package that finally did pass a few weeks ago. What do you think the state's role is going to be in providing relief to Maryland citizens caused by the pandemic?
So the federal stimulus doesn't help our bottom line, but it does, as I referenced before, that what it does take pressure off the general fund to pay for things to get us through the pandemic, such as the testing, our school vaccine distribution, and rental assistance. And we have real hope that the incoming administration and the new Congress being more favorable to the needs and our congressional delegation in terms of the needs to help us even further to get through.
And I know we got to let you go, but before we do, let me ask you one more question, and that's about sports betting. Marylanders overwhelmingly voted to support the implementation of sports betting in the election in November. What remains for the legislature to do in that process of having sports betting become a reality here in the state?
Well, there's been a sports betting committee with House leaders, which they're outlining the bill, and the focus of that work group was on stimulating minority equity participation in this new industry, while also ensuring that the state gets more funding for education.
And you'll need to, you know, sort of establish the rules for how sports betting is going to work, right? Yeah. That's Speaker of the House, Adrian Jones. Madam Speaker, thank you so much. Good luck and Godspeed in this session of the General Assembly, which, as we said, begins tomorrow. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Yesterday, after Speaker Jones and I taped our conversation, Governor Larry Hogan held a press conference in which he announced that his top legislative priority would be the Relief Act of 2021. The governor's proposal is for payments that are means-tested for low- and moderate-income Marylanders who are eligible to claim the Earned Income Tax Credit. Direct payments would be up to $450 for individuals and $750 for families, followed by a second round of payments later of up to $150 for individuals and $250 for families. We will continue our preview of the 2021 Maryland General Assembly later this week here on Midday with Senate President Bill Ferguson. Quick break, and when we come back, for 4 years, America has been fed a steady diet of falsehoods, fabrications, and pernicious demagoguery from Donald Trump. As Trump's term comes to an end, a conversation about another infamous demagogue, Joe McCarthy. Author Larry Tye joins me when we return. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
You're listening to your NPR news station, 88.1 WYPR.